For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Good evening.
I want to respond this evening to develop some of the things that Joe Galuski, our speaker yesterday morning, spoke about. Aside from being a Zen priest and co-leader of our affiliate Sangha in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Joe is a climate scientist and was talking about some aspects of climate. I want to also refer to some of the things I talked about last Monday. A couple of you were here. So there are many things to say. I spoke about Pope Francis, and last Monday I want to say some more about what he's been saying. But I wanted to mainly focus on what Joe said yesterday about time. Joe's a geologist and was talking about geological time. And I also wanted to kind of focus on what he was saying about hope, which is a kind of funny word. Joe was talking about his work being up in the Peruvian Andes at the edge of a large ancient glacier and watching it melt, and his reflections on that and on climate change and what's happening in terms of that. But he put it in an interesting context in terms of geological time. And it's more than geological time, it's kind of human karmic time. And I think in terms of our practice, it's personal geological time and communal karmic time. Joe said that, that human beings have been around for about 200,000 years. Human beings basically the same as us. But that climate, and I didn't realize this fully, you know, has shifted. Through most of that time, was shifted. And it's only about 8,000 years ago that climate became fairly stable. And only because of that were humans able to develop cities and agriculture and what passes for civilization, we would call that. So we have 8,000 years of that, and now we have this, he talked about this being geologically the Anthropocene age, that we are, as human beings, are having a large impact on climate, and, you know, there's lots of facts about that. I talked about some of them last Monday, but this year is the hottest year in recorded history, that July was the hottest month in recorded history. The rainfall a week ago in South Carolina that was called by the governor a once-in-a-thousand-year rainfall. So that kind of, and what's happening in California and many places around the world, drought, rainfall, forest fires as a result of drought, what's going to be happening in terms of, well, we already have climate refugees, and that's a big problem in Asia. In Europe, coming from the Mideast and Africa. Anyway, we're living in this geologically very tumultuous time. And I think this has to do with our practice. You know, when we sit upright and present, we focus on this present experience. And we pay attention, and, you know, our practice is to sit upright in the middle of whatever's going on and pay attention to thoughts and feelings and sensations, not to try and figure them out or do anything with them, but just to be present and our thinking process continues to chatter along. We observe. Sometimes there's spaces And, you know, when we can sit present and upright and we find some calm in the middle of that, we can connect with being fully present. Some Dogen translators call it presencing, to bring our attention to this present experience. But this present experience is not separate from geological time, too. So personal geological time, that, you know, all of the experiences, causes and conditions and reactivity and loss and sadness and joy and confusion and regret and all of that stuff is part of what's here present in our, and comes up in our thoughts and feelings as we sit. Taking the next breath, enjoying, inhale, enjoying, exhale. So being present, our practice of presencing, has to do with a wide view of time. Actually, Dogen talks about this a lot. In terms of being time, the time is not some kind of abstract, external set container, but is the flowing of our own experience and activity and awareness. And all of that together, because we kind of create the world together. So, particularly in our practice and teaching tradition, we have access to a really wide sense of time. It's one of the gifts of this tradition and of this practice, actually. We refer to teachings from Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived historically 2,500 years ago, more or less. And I mentioned Dogen, who lived in the 1200s. And we chanted the precious Marisamadhi, traditionally considered to have been composed by Dongshan in the 800s. And studied for many centuries, 1,000 years since then. So we have this sense of this practice, and this is particularly true of Zen, I think in other Asian spiritual traditions. I'll speak of Asian religion. Next week Brian will talk about the connection between Asian religion and Christian, Western traditions. But Zen particularly is kind of, I think of as Confucian Buddhism. There's an emphasis on ancestors and lineage and history. Indian and I think Tibetan Buddhism, much less so. I guess there are lineages, of course, in Tibetan Buddhism, but it's not as focused on. Maybe Rachel can correct me about that. We'll have some time for discussion. At any rate, we have this sense of a tradition that goes way back and hopefully way forward. So, people come to meditation practice looking for some settledness, some calm, some peace of mind, to be present. But we realize, you know, part of what the practice does for us, just sitting upright and facing ourselves and all the thoughts and confusion and habit patterns and so forth, we start to realize that and this interconnectedness that Pope Francis talked about. So one of the remarkable things about his encyclical, and I haven't read it all, but parts of it, that he talks a lot about interconnectedness and dependent co-arising. I don't know if he uses that phrase exactly, but that's what he's talking about. And about, he talks about integral ecology. This sense of our responsibility for everything. That when we sit, we're not just sitting, you know, I think in our culture, meditation is like, you know, one of those self-help techniques for a lot of people. The mindfulness meditation can be that, can be something more. But to we see that we are connected. We're interconnected, as Pope Francis says, with everything in the world and all the other beings and all the beings who are going extinct. And as, you know, as Joe was saying yesterday, everything changes. And all the different many species that have inhabited this planet, most have gone extinct. We will eventually too, as human beings. But we're connected with all different beings around us. You know, what happens in the glaciers in the Andes and in the Himalayas affects people around the world, and you know, some countries want to build walls to keep other people out. But we can't really do that. We're connected. And so we start to realize, and that's kind of on a global level, but also we realize that our, whatever it is that's on sitting on your cushion or chair right now is a product of many, many beings, friends, family, loved ones, teachers, siblings, many beings, pet, childhood pets, all are part of what's happening on your seat right now. So our practice is not just for ourselves. That's the point I was getting to. That we practice as part of this web of connectedness in space and in time. So we're connected with, as I sometimes say, the, you know, the people walking by in front of Irving Park Road in 100 years or 250 years or whatever. Whether or not it'll be called Irving Park Road, then who knows. But okay, so we sit in the middle of all this, and we're present in the middle of all this. And what's happening in the planet affects us, and what's happening in our society affects us. In terms of human karma, you know, the climate damage is connected to all the problems of our society, and today is Native American Day. With apologies to any of you who are Italian American, and it used to be called Columbus Day, but anyway, and of course, starting with Columbus, the native peoples of this continent were almost exterminated, fortunately not quite, but and then, you know, our economy was built on slavery and racism, and all of that karma of greed, hate, and delusion, which we all have a piece of, is part of what has led to our current situation where the climate is being damaged and, you know, we have government and media and economy, you know, of, by, and for the billionaires and corporations rule. It's just the way things are now. So, you know, one of the things that Joe was talking about and I want to talk about and have talked about is that we can look at all this and feel some great despair. And I don't think that's realistic. I think there's plenty of reason for hope. Because there's change. Everything is changing. And we can see it over, you know, the world that the Buddha lived in India was incredibly different from, you know, what we have here. He didn't have electric lights.
Air conditioning.
Didn't have air conditioning. Just sat in the heat or the cold. Well, mostly it was heat in India. But anyway, things change. And, you know, what Joe said yesterday is really important, that the way things change, we don't understand and we don't know. But it seems to be, historically and even geologically, that things change suddenly after a long time of causes and conditions that lead up to it. So he gave the example of, some of you may remember, Soviet Union breaking up, Berlin Wall falling, apartheid ending. There are more recent examples. Gay marriage is now legal. which I think was unthinkable 5 years ago, or anyway, even the Supreme Court. Things change, and they change suddenly. And Joe referred to last week to this book and now movie by Naomi Klein, This Changes Everything. So I was going to keep this for the announcements, but I won't. I'll just... there's a few flyers up front. Next Tuesday, which will be tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Music Box Theater on Southport, there's a showing of this new film, This Changes Everything, based on Naomi Klein's book. She will be there for question and answer. So there's information about that up front. This is, her book is called This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. And her analysis, which is quite similar in a lot of ways to Pope Francis's way of talking about it. Pope Francis invoked the great Chicago and Dorothy Day, founder of the Catholic Workers, and he invoked Thomas Merton. And in December, we're going to have Charles Strain from DePaul here talking about the prophet and the bodhisattva, comparing Thich Nhat Hanh and Dan Berrigan. So there's a tradition in the Catholic Church and in many spiritual traditions that's quite concerned about inequality and the poor and taking care of people. And, you know, this is our practice too. We chant for benefiting all beings. Beings are numberless. We've got a freedom. We realize that we actually are connected, that we can't build walls to keep, you know, so-called other people out forever. So there is hope, you know, just in the fact of Pope Francis and him, the head of this huge, very conservative religious institution, taking this, you know, I don't know, he's... I don't know that I would agree with everything that he says or represents, but certainly this is a... he's being very active and bold about encouraging the bishops in America, for example, to speak about climate and about inequality and poverty and against the death penalty. And anyway, this is not... it's significant as an effect on our world. There are other causes for hope. Naomi Klein's perspective is really interesting. She talks about the way, her last book was about disaster capitalism, and the way that capitalism has been transformed in our society. I don't know what perfect capitalism would be like, but anyway, we have this... control of government and by the corporations, for the corporations, and so forth, which neglects the well-being of the masses of people. But Naomi Klein talks about how this climate crisis is an opportunity. So in our personal lives, it happens that we have some crisis. I think many people have come to practice, for example, after the loss of a loved one, or the loss of a relationship, or a job, or some unfortunate change, part of our practice, a huge part of our practice, is just being able to be present and upright right amid sadness, amid unfortunate change. But out of that, sometimes in our personal lives, something positive and wonderful can happen. We can shift our habits. We can shift how we see things. Transformation happens individually, collectively, geologically, and so Naomi Klein says this changes everything. That in order for human beings to face climate, and Joe was talking with me yesterday about how, you know, the idea that it's hopeless and you know, this feeling of gloom and doom is not realistic. scientifically, geologically, we don't know how things will change. And so for human beings, this climate crisis is a huge opportunity for transformation. I think that's a really helpful, wonderful, useful, and realistic way of seeing things. And of course, it's very available to feel sad and hopeless. I mean, it is. And those two aren't the same thing. You can feel sad and use that energy to help create change. So this is a time of opportunity for human beings, and I think our practice is part of just being here and doing Zazen is part of a response to climate damage. Of course, much more is needed. But just changing our physical way of thinking, this physical yogic practice of facing the First Noble Truth, facing sadness, facing loss, facing misalignment, facing suffering, if you will, that we can do that and remain upright is tremendously powerful. It represents tremendous hope. It represents a new way of seeing life. And when more people do this, and I'm not talking just about Zen meditation, but are willing in whatever mode or tradition they find themselves facing the reality of our own lives and of the life of the world around us, when people can do that and be responsive and aware and not, you know, try and run away from themselves or the situation, but actually just stay, remain seated, remain present, remain upright. It's tremendously powerful. This is part of the change that we need. So Pope Francis, though, has asked for something more. He has been encouraging people of faith particularly to take action now, to respond. I want to read again, as I did last week, some of what Pope Francis says. He talks about the climate as a common good. The present ecological crisis is one small sign of the ethical, cultural, and spiritual crisis of modernity. Everything is related, and we human beings are united as brothers and sisters on a wonderful pilgrimage, woven together by the love God, I could say Buddha or Buddha nature, but whatever, has for each of his creatures, and which also unites us in fond affection with brother sun, sister moon, brother river, and mother earth. He says the earth is essentially a shared inheritance whose fruits are meant to benefit everyone. And he talks about specific things like access to safe drinkable water as a basic and universal human right, which many poor people don't have now. So he encourages recognizing the specific context and reasons for pollution and the workings of society and the economy and our behavior and how reality has been transformed. He says the two separate crises, environmental and social, are not separate, but rather one complex crisis, both social and environmental, that we need an integrated approach to combating poverty, restoring dignity to the excluded, and at the same time protecting nature. So that's another way that Zazen is related to this. You know, I think of Zazen, one aspect of Zazen anyway, is to find our inner dignity, each of us, each in our own way. Again, to be able to be present and still and upright to the best of our ability in the middle of the sadness of and pain of our world and our lives. Not to ignore the joys and hopefulness of our lives either. I've been thinking of Rumi's, the great Sufi poet Rumi, saying the cure for pain is in the pain. We have to face a situation. But when we do that, there's a tremendous dignity is one word, that we can find. An inner creative spirit, the spirit of possibilities. So Pope John talks about how we need to change and develop new convictions, attitudes, and forms of life, including new lifestyles. This is not just individual conversion, but also community networks to solve complex situations facing our world today. And, you know, there are, again, there are numbers of hopeful things happening. The fact that Shell Oil withdrew from drilling in the Arctic even after President Obama had given them permission, they just realized that it wasn't feasible. And it would have been terrible if that had gone forward. And, you know, just that it's become, that we know now that ExxonMobil knew in the 70s and did research that they knew about climate change and how damaging it would be back then, and decided to, instead of talking and furthering up their research, they decided to put billions of dollars into denial and like the tobacco companies knew about cancer from cigarettes. So Naomi Klein talks about how do we say yes to change, to a positive change. And again, the Pope encourages people of faith, that means us in some way, to action. And, you know, some of us have been talking about how to do that as Sangha. And actually, again, we already are doing that because many people in our Sangha are doing, you know, living lives in which they're being helpful in the context, whatever context they're in, working in corporations or doing social work or therapy or, you know, creative work. Zazen supports that. But there are things we can do, so we're going to be having the first of a series of outreach events at the Lakeview Pantry this month. It's already filled up, and we're going to be having more of those, just helping people who are feeding the hungry. And, you know, we're open to anybody who has suggestions of things that we can do as Sangha. But also, each of us together. So this is the Bodhisattva practice. I've been giving this quote from Dogen. The family style of all Buddhas and ancestors is first to arouse the vow to save all living beings by removing suffering and providing joy. So like Pope Francis, who took the name Francis, the great saint of the natural world, of animals and plants, you know, all beings. Our practice is connected to all beings. And again, I was going to save this for announcements, but it's part of what I'm talking about. So I mentioned this film with Naomi Klein a week from tomorrow at the Music Box, and she'll be there. But there's an event this Wednesday evening. I'm going to go, and if anybody wants to come join me, you're welcome to. It's a climate justice vigil and march sponsored by 350.org, and there are going to be these kinds of vigils and marches all around the country. But the one in Chicago will be start 5 o'clock this Wednesday at Old St. Pat's Church, 700 West Adams Street. We can face this, and change does happen. And hopelessness, it's not realistic, actually. And it's available, you know. And we have to feel the sadness, but we don't know how change will happen. But we know that it will happen. So what's happening now in our society, the climate and our economy some of the ridiculous things happening in our political system, they will change. They're not sustainable. And part of our practice tradition is to have a wide view. You know, and also, like Dr. King said, that the arc of history, I hope I get the quote right, but I'll get it close. The arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. This is not something, you know, this is not dependent on our political elected leaders. This is something that the people, by each of us talking about this, being willing to face this, enjoying our practice and our creativity and our communality, that we can help make change. So I've been babbling enough. I'll listen to welcome any comments, questions, responses. Please feel free. Yes, Brian.
I've been thinking about wondering how Zazen actually contributes to perhaps a healthier relationship with the environment. And one of the things that's come to mind is about simply cultivating a capacity for awareness, self-awareness. Mm-hmm. I remember I used to go to this gym in Albuquerque when I lived there, and it was a 15-year drought going on there, and it was a terrible situation. They kept building more and more housing developments, and I'd go to this gym, and in the bathroom, in the men's room, guys would be shaving as the water's running full blast, talking for 10 minutes to someone else as they're sort of slowly shaving, the water's going, and a little sign from them that says, "Please help conserve water." And it's easy to be judgmental about that. Sometimes I feel my own anger about that rising up, but it brings to mind that there are many ways in which simple self-awareness, which includes awareness of one's immediate environment, helps with things like just simple little things like not wasting water, not littering, and recycling more, and paying attention to how much you drive, and all kinds of lifestyle issues, which are not going to solve the climate problem, but it's important to start here. And I think self-awareness is a problem for some people who don't want to think about that. It's not necessarily because they disagree with recycling. It's just that there's not enough awareness, self-awareness about it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And doing those practices helps us and helps those around us to be more aware. And that's definitely a part of the solution. But, you know, I just have to add that the situation in terms of the climate, we do, as I was saying last Monday, we do need to change our energy system. And here we are using, you know, fossil fuels for our, you know, we're all part of the problem.
Right.
It's not that there's some perfect purity, you know, the fossil fuels need to stay in the ground. The whole aggregate of them, we need to change. We actually have the technology, solar and others. It's the popular political doesn't mean just politicians. The political will to do what's necessary to change. And there are more. Potentially more jobs available through conversion to solar and developing that, for example. So we have to look at that level too, and that's the level that actually Pope Francis is asking us to look at, and that 350.org is talking about. In terms of enough people doing both, looking at being more self-aware about driving and water use and so forth, and also looking at what's happening in society. And we each have our own way of responding. So it's not about, you know, being self-righteous about some particular tactic, but
But I guess if I could follow up,
please.
What I was trying to get to was that those sorts of personal practices that can come out of self-awareness, I think, are at the foundation of them doing some of these bigger actions that you talked about. Mm-hmm. If we start doing these things individually, then we're more likely to be engaged in something on a bigger scale.
I agree. Yeah. Thank you. Other comments? Hi there.
I have two of them. One, I think, isn't it part of, and it's a question, isn't it part of our practice is to be in present, in a sense, no matter what the situation.
I'm sorry, I have to go to be present. To be present, okay.
And no matter what the situation. And as I have that sense of connectedness and calm, regardless of what's going on. And I think that, you know, like I just heard something on the radio today. We don't know, you know, you and me have been on a planet for 200,000 years, but we don't know if we'll be on a planet 5,000 or 50,000 years from now.
Right.
We as a species may.
Or much sooner than that, possibly.
Possibly, yeah. And
but not necessarily.
Not necessarily. But if you think it's just to be present, regardless of what's going on, it's to be connected. But I think that it's as wrong as that, from my point of view, is that it's so wrong, it's not helpful, is that we're so disconnected that it allows all these things to happen. But it's also what I heard you talk about, struck by, is, you know, what is conservatism? And conservatism is trying to hold on to what you have rather than embracing change. And I just see everybody is, it's like we're all trying to hang on to our lifestyles, to what we think is good, because we're afraid of change. And maybe the whole thing is to accept change.
That's a really key point. What is our relationship to change? Mm-hmm. Our whole body is changing all the time. You know, old age, sickness, and death, you know, and so forth. Change is happening. Yeah. And I think you're right that there's a kind of, it's a biological impulse to just hold on, and a kind of inertia that we want. Change is difficult. Some change is really good, some change is really bad, you know. But, good and bad, you know, from our perspectives. But how can we, part of Zazen is settling and calming. Part of it is that we develop a kind of sense of spaciousness and flexibility and openness. The more we are able to face our own patterns of reactivity, our own tendencies to hold on, and so forth, the more we can actually be upright and present with that, the more we are available to shift and to work with change and to help, you know, try and make the changes more helpful and less harmful. Part of Zazen is that we develop a kind of resilience. So, you know, I believe that people in the Sangha, individually and hopefully collectively, if there was some climate or other kind of emergency in Chicago, our practice would help us make us more helpful. We'd be a little more settled, a little more open to, you know, there's all the stories about what people did in Katrina and Hurricane Sandy and all the, you know, how to be helpful. And just having the regular practice of just stopping and sitting down and being present and upright and just paying attention to all the stuff that's going on our own seat gives us a kind of resilience, is a good word, steadiness, a kind of capacity to be more flexible and more responsive and more helpful. It doesn't mean being perfect. We're not necessarily going to always, you know, we might, who knows what would happen if, you know, a tsunami came, you know, came down the road from Lake Michigan or whatever, we don't know what we would do, but we have a little more capacity to be flexible, I know. So, yeah, did you have something else to do?
The full sense of change.
Yeah, that's a huge issue. How do we, our Zazen is about sitting still and looking like we're not changing, you know, like we're not moving, you know, this instruction is to sit still, don't move, be present, you know. But of course, as the precious Mahesh Samadhi says, even though we're sitting still, it's about cowering rats. You know, inside, outside still, inside trembling like tethered colts or cowering rats. So, you know, how do we face the inner shakiness of, you know, I mean, you walk into a room full of people who've been sitting for half the day and everybody's sitting still and it's just, it looks very stoic. And but, you know, this is about how to be alive. Rachel.
With respect to change, when you're sitting there in session and you're just trying to be present there, or even when you come out of session, you're going about your daily life and you're trying to be present, I think the bigger challenge for me is how to be motivated to, rather than just kind of slow, seaweed aimlessly, how do you really go for something like, okay, I want effect change, I want to stop global climate change, and I have these great ideas, and I want to implement them this way and that way and that way. But how do you balance that kind of drive and determination with getting things done and still being present, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that for me is really the, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, that's the question. How do we do that? So the question of skillful means is one of the bodhisattva practices, but so is vow or commitment. You know, we take on, okay, I'm going to do what I can to, you know, put my body out there to show up on the streets when my schedule allows, and represent for stopping climate damage. Hi, come on. We're sort of at the end of the discussion. Have a seat. Zen doesn't mean just being, you know, this is not about being a Zen zombie. Okay?
Right.
It's like, okay, when it's time to get up and act, we do that. But having this practice, this regular practice of being of settling and slowing down a little and just paying attention to what's actually happening in this body and mind, not our stories about it, but actually facing this present, gives us a capacity to try things, to go out and, you know, so come Wednesday evening and do this vigil with me if you want.
Bring a big marker and a poster board so I can make a sign.
You can do that. It's okay to carry signs. Or not.
Or not.
I'll wear my rock suit anyway.
Is that meant to be it's being hosted at St. Pat's and you're going, is it kind of encouraged by religious leaders or is it just a general?
It's 350.org, Bill McKibben's organization. Joe was talking yesterday about how that's actually in some ways discouraging because we're never going to get back to 350 parts per million. So, and Bill McKibben and James Hansen and other climate activists say, well, game's over after that. But actually, we don't know that. The point is, so that's just a technical point, really. They're the biggest organization that's been really getting people activated around the world to respond, and this is part of, you know, what supports Pope Francis to speak out the way he has, and and Shell decided to withdraw from our drilling in the Arctic partly because there were people out there who were, you know, calling attention to it and talking about it, and so again, we don't know how change happens; we just know it does. And our efforts can be part of that, and including the things Brian was talking about. And then, if you want to go out and do something more active in terms of climate or in something else related, it's all related. That's the Buddhist truth, and that's what the Pope Francis is talking about: inequality and poverty and injustice in our society, gun violence. All of it's related to the way our society is organized right now. So any piece of it that calls you to respond, go for it. And let us know about it, and some of us may, some other people may come along with you. All right.